Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, November 7th, 2015. I'm on vacation, so Scott Wilkinson helms episode 1235. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Corning Optical Cables. Corning's incredibly durable Thunderbolt and USB 3.0 optical cables are longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to OpticalCablesByCorning.com to learn more.
Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo is off on a mission to visit his son at college. In fact, they're having some sort of special father-son fraternity thing. Who knows? Maybe they'll go to a toga party tonight. He'll be back tomorrow.
Okay, let's keep our eyes peeled on social media for that. Father-son toga. Got it.
Got it. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but I'm just saying. While Leo is away, he has asked me to come in and fill in for him, which I am absolutely thrilled to do. And I'm here with Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. Hey, Heather.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How about yourself?
You're looking fit. Feeling
thank
good.
You. Thank you. Having a great time, even in these first few moments of the show. We got 3 whole hours. Now, Leo, of course, talks about anything with a chip in it, as he says. And he's so great at it, too. But I'm more of a specialist, you might say. My field is home theater and audio and video, and so that's what we're going to talk about all day today. You know, when the cat's away, the mice will play. And what we're going to play is all about home theater, so and anything audio, video, really. So I hope that you will give me a call at 8888-ASK-LEO. Though, of course, today you're going to be talking to Scott, me. And that number, again, for those of you who are alphabetically challenged on the telephone keypad, as I am, that's 888-827-5536. You can also join the chat room, and I really recommend that you do, because that's where, as Leo says, his brain resides. There's all kinds of great people in there. It's kind of like the kids at the back of the class, you know, the nerds who kibitz among themselves and come up with some great answers. And I'm really looking forward to hearing what they have to say as well. You can do that by going into irc.twit.tv or going to this show's website, techguylabs.com. And don't be afraid. There's a lot of people in there right now. But it's very highly moderated, so it's a family-friendly environment. We have a great, great cast of moderators in there who are keeping an eye on things. And meanwhile, everybody else gets to chatter amongst themselves and maybe even help me answer a question or two, because I certainly don't know everything. Now, I have been in this business a long time. I've been a journalist in the audio-video industry for well over 20 years. Been to many CES shows, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and I've seen a lot of progress being made in the audio-video world. And in fact, we are at this moment in the middle of a serious transition. Those of you who are old enough will remember the transition from standard definition to high definition. And that was a transition that took a few years and had some bumps along the way. But we now have had at least 10 years of high definition, so it's high time for something new. You know, the consumer electronics industry is just like any other industry. They need to keep coming up with something new, and so they do. And what they have come up with is called ultra high definition. Ooh, yeah. It's... the first thing about it is that it has more pixels. You know, a high definition HD TV has 1920 pixels across by 1080 down, up and down. And that's about 2 million pixels on the screen. And you might think, well, that's plenty, isn't it? Why do I need more than that? Well, that's a kind of a good question, actually, because I don't think you necessarily need any more than that, but the TV manufacturers in particular got ahead of the game and said, we're going to make TVs with four times as many pixels on the screen. And I'm going, okay, well, first of all, you can't really see the pixels on an HD TV when you're sitting at a normal distance. And by normal distance, I mean most people sit like 9-10 feet away from their TV, if not more. And the farther you sit from the TV, the less... detail and resolution you can actually perceive because of the limits of the human visual system. And so multiplying that by four, putting four times more pixels on the screen, seemed to me to be, I don't know, not necessarily the most important thing. But that's what TV makers did. And now you can hardly buy a TV that doesn't have Ultra HD resolution, which is 3840 pixels across by 2160 pixels down, exactly twice the number across and exactly twice the number down. But now, as I said, you can hardly find TVs, at least in the mid to higher range, that have 1080p. They're all Ultra HD. If you go into the extreme low end, you'll still find 1080p TVs. But there's hardly any choice anymore. What's more important to me is what's coming down the pike next year. And that is something called high dynamic range and wide color gamut. And what that means is dynamic range is simply the difference between the deepest black and the brightest white that's in the signal and that's also capable, that your TV is capable of displaying. And at the moment, it is a certain range. But in next year, we are now talking about something called high dynamic range, which means brighter whites and deeper blacks. And wide color gamut means the range of colors that can be represented and reproduced on the TV. And at the moment, we have a certain color gamut. It's known by the number 709. And but that's going to expand as well. And we're going to see colors on TV that we've never seen before, at least on TV. The point of Ultra HD, ultimately, is to more closely reproduce what we see in real life. That is the goal. And humans can see a lot more dynamic range than what we see on TV right now. And they can see, I'm counting myself as a human, can see a wider range of colors, perceive a wider range of colors than we can see on TV. And so the goal here is to more closely represent what we see in real life. We don't have that yet, but we will soon. In fact, next year, I suspect we will see some TVs. We already see a few, but we're going to see more next year, many more. And we're going to see content that takes advantage of this wider color gamut and higher dynamic range in order to make a more involving, more immersive picture. And this is very, very exciting. I'm really looking forward to it tremendously. And we can talk about that later. The other really important thing that's going on in home theater right now is immersive audio, which has to do not only with surround sound around you, but speakers overhead as well, creating a fully three-dimensional sound field around you, which again has the goal of recreating reality more exactly and being more immersive so that you get involved more in the story, whether it's a TV show or a movie. And so there's all sorts of things that we're right in the middle of transition of right now. And at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, this coming January, we're going to see a ton of stuff in this regard. So this is a very exciting time to be a home theater geek, I got to tell you. And I do hope that you will give me a call if you have a question about home theater geekery. That's at 8888-ASK-LEO or 888-827-5536. We're going to start taking calls here right after the break, which is coming up pretty soon. And I want to thank Heather Hammon for being here. And she's already lined up a bunch of calls.
Full board.
Full board already.
Great calls, too.
Oh, excellent. We'll get right back to that after this. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we are going to get going on some phone calls here. I think we have Ellie in Honolulu, line 3. Did I do that right? Ellie, are you there? Oh, now you're there.
Yep.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome.
Oh, nice to speak to you. I don't think I've ever spoken.
Well, you're calling from
Leo a lot, but
well, I sure appreciate you calling in today. How can I help you?
Well, you're a theater geek and a TV geek and all that.
Oh yeah.
I came across this remote. It's called Blue Moo, and I wanted to know what you knew about it because it connects all your devices, and you can use it through your iPhone or your iPad or whatever you have.
Mm-hmm. It's an app, basically, that's a universal remote control app.
You have to buy this piece that you put next to your TV.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, right. Well, I don't know this one in particular, but I know a lot about universal remotes or smart remotes. And I myself do not prefer to have my remote in a touchscreen format with a backlight, basically. And the reason is you have to look at it to find what you want to touch, right? You want to touch the volume control or the mute control or change channels or something like that. You have to look at the thing, and it's bright. And if you're in a dark room and you're watching TV and you look at this bright thing, it's going to change the adaptation of your vision, which I prefer not to do. I prefer universal remotes that have physical buttons that you can find by feel.
I have a lot of trouble with the buttons because they're so close together and everything.
It depends on the remote. What universal remotes have you tried before?
Well, I've been using a stupid cable remote.
Oh, well, we can do a lot better than that.
And I want something that's voice controlled, and that's hard to find.
Ah, well, voice control is a little trickier. Now, there are some devices that do have voice control. Roku, I think, does. The new Apple TV, I think, does.
But you can't change your regular channels.
Exactly. You know, that's a good question. I'll have to do a little research on that to see if there are any truly universal remotes with voice control. This Blue Moo, I guess, has voice control, huh?
No, but it does work on your devices, and you can use it on anything.
Yeah, well,
it's like, you have to look at their site. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it right now, and it does look pretty cool. I will tell you that. It doesn't change my mind, though, about philosophically, shall we say.
Right.
About not wanting to have to look at a bright thing to do something, to find a button. And so my favorite universal remotes are from a company called Logitech. They are the Harmony series.
Yeah, I did see that, the Harmony.
Yeah. Those are my favorite ones. And they make some that are like this touchscreen, which I don't like. And they also make some that have physical buttons, which I do like. That's the kind of remote that I really like because they designed them very intelligently with different size and shape buttons, right? So you can find them by feel when you're in a dark room. They're also much easier to program than most universal remotes. The other common universal remote that a lot of people use is from a company called Universal Remote Control, or URC. You know, clever name, eh? But they're much more difficult to program. You typically hire somebody to program them, whereas the
you don't need to do that.
The Logitech Harmonies you can do yourself. What you do is you plug it into your computer with USB. You go to the Harmony website. You have to create an account. It's free, and you tell it what equipment you have and what equipment is involved in each activity. It's at what's called activity based. So it's there's an activity called watch TV or watch a Blu-ray or play a game or listen to the radio, and you set up these activities and you say, okay, when I push watch a Blu-ray, I want the Blu-ray player to come on, I want the TV to come on, I want my AV receiver to come on, and I want all the inputs to switch where they're supposed to be. And you just tell it which inputs are needed for each activity, and it automatically sets up the remote to take care of it
all. So it basically works like the Blue Moo, except with buttons.
Correct.
Okay.
And that, I have to tell you, is my strong preference. And that's just my preference. You know, there are other people will have other ideas, other preferences,
right.
You know. And you might be fine with looking at a bright thing to find the button you want to press. I don't like that myself. So that's
right.
Why I like that's why I like the Logitech Harmony.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for listening.
All right. Take care.
You bet. All right, we got a little bit of time left. Heather, who should I call? Should I talk to next?
Yeah, let's try Ed in Ontario, California.
Ed in Ontario, California. That looks like line two. Have I still got you?
Yes, Scott.
Ed, hey, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Good, thank you. So I got an old TV and an old receiver, and it's time to finally upgrade. So I was wondering if you could recommend an AV receiver and some speakers to go along with it.
Sure. What kind of budget have you got?
Whatever my wife allows me.
Yeah.
But honestly, I got kids in college, so probably not a big budget.
Okay. No, I can dig it. Okay. Speakers are pretty easy. I really like the Pioneer speakers that are designed by Andrew Jones. And they come in bookshelf size or floor standing size, and they come with a subwoofer. And you can get an entire 5.1 speaker system for like $550, something like that. Pretty inexpensive. The other thing I would recommend you look at, if you have a little more money to spend on speakers, is a company called ELAC, E-L-A-C, where Andrew Jones, the guy who designed the Pioneer speakers that I like so much, he moved over to ELAC, and he's now designed a series of speakers called the Debut Series with ELAC. They're a little more expensive, but they're probably at least as good, if not better, probably better. Because, of course, we all learn as we go, right? And so he learns from every project he does and incorporates what he's learned into improvements. So the ELAC Debut Series would be another one to really look at. I can't recall the prices off the top of my head, but I think you'd probably be closer to $1,000 for a surround system. And then as far as AV receivers are concerned, I would want you to spend at least $500. Less than that, and you start to get into things like spring clips for speaker terminals instead of binding posts, and those are kind of funky. So at about $500 is where I would be minimum for a receiver, and if you can get one from Denon, Marantz, a variety of them, that's the way to go. Hey, it looks like it's commercial time. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo. He managed to get a word in here edgewise, but for the most part, he's off visiting his son in college, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And he asked me to sit in for him, and I'm super happy to do that. Let's take another call. Heather, who should I talk to?
We've got Bill in Yucca Valley on line one.
Bill in Yucca Valley. Let me turn on that. And Bill, do you hear me?
Yes, I do, Scott.
Excellent.
How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. How about yourself?
I just want to mention one thing. I really enjoyed your wife and your concert last year on the New Year's Eve special.
Oh, aren't you sweet? Thank you so much.
But my question for today is, Scott, I'm looking to buy probably a mid-range TV, you know, right around Black Friday.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I'm looking at a couple of TVs. One is the Hitachi. It's a 1080p, but it's a 55-inch. And do you have any information on that brand, or is it pretty good, or is it low-end?
You know,
I don't want anything like the Spectre or something.
Yeah, right. The Spectre or Scepter, is it? I forget which one.
Right.
Insignia, Element, those are house brands of Best Buy and other retailers. I would stay away from those. Hitachi sort of got out of the TV business a while ago. So where you're finding a new one, I can't really say. I wouldn't.
Well, it's going to. I've already seen the ad. It's going to be a special at Sam's Club, but it's like a 55-inch TV with Roku built into it, and it's like $400.
Mm, you know, yeah.
I've tried to do some research on it, but I can't really find anything on it.
Yeah, I would be hesitant to buy a Hitachi because they are no longer not much in the TV business anymore. They were several years ago, but I haven't heard hide nor hair of them. This is the first I've heard of a Hitachi TV in quite a while, actually.
Right, yeah.
I got to tell you, my general recommendation for relatively inexpensive but high-quality TVs is Vizio, right? This company Vizio, V-I-Z-I-O.
I also heard you mention that, you know, there's specific models that are decent and not decent.
Well, in the realm of Vizio, I have to say anything from the M series up. They have several series. They have the E series, which interestingly is the entry level series, which is still, I believe, 1080p. Then they have the M series, which is the midline series, interestingly, and that's 4K or UHD resolution. Then they have the P series above that, which is also 4K resolution. And then finally at the top of their heap is the reference series, which is the first one from Vizio and one of the first on the market to have high dynamic range, this thing I was talking about at the beginning of the show. And it looks spectacular, but it's expensive. They only come in two sizes. The 65-inch is $6,000.
Right.
And the 120-inch, which you basically have to build your house around, is $130,000. So I don't recommend those for anybody but, you know, the 0.1%.
Right.
You know, coming back to Earth, the M series is phenomenal for the money. And it's not $400 for a 55 inch. It's more than that, but not tremendously more. If you can stretch your budget a little bit.
I think Sam's is also going to have a sale on those.
I wouldn't be surprised.
M series. And I think it's going to be right around $500.
Well, then I would definitely go for that over the Hitachi. No question whatsoever.
Okay.
That is going to be a much better thing. Vizio is a going concern. They're big into TVs. Hitachi is kind of a fringe player at this point, to tell you the truth.
Terrific. Scott, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Heather, who else we got here? Oh, you're making a face. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Okay. Well, you know what? I might have your switch turned off there. I'm going to go ahead and go to line three, Ricky in Albuquerque. How's that? Is that going to be okay? You're nodding yes. Ricky, hey, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Nice to talk to you. Big fan of yours.
Oh, thanks so much. How can I help you?
Yeah. I'd just like to say I really enjoyed your Home Theater Geeks podcast when you calibrated Leo's television. That was extremely... That was very interesting. I loved it.
Thank you. That was really, really fun. I was on with Robert Heron. We were at Leo's house late into the evening, and we calibrated his OLED TV, and what great fun that was. So what can I do to help you?
Well, speaking of OLED, I would like to buy one.
Ooh,
and,
nice.
I understand LG are the only ones that are making that, correct?
Correct. At the moment, that is correct.
And they have two 1080p models, and I'm wondering, what are the difference between the two, if any?
Well, boy, I guess I don't know of specific little minutia-type details, differences between them. They are at the lower end, so they're less expensive, and they're 1080p. one might be curved. I think one is curved, and they just introduced another curved one. Do they have a flat one at 1080p? I don't think so.
No, I think they have a 65-inch flat one, but that's 4K.
Correct. So I don't know the difference between the two 1080p ones. I will tell you that LG had some trouble recently. I saw this in June where the screen had a kind of an irregularity along the outer edges, the right and left edges. And it was a uniformity issue that only really cropped up when the picture was dark, when there was just a dark part of the picture. And they've since fixed that. So if you haven't bought one yet, now is probably a good time to do it, because that was a panel problem. That was actually a hardware problem. We thought they might be able to fix it with a firmware update, but they couldn't. That was not it. It was an actual panel problem. I don't know whether the 1080p sets had that problem. I would suspect so, because, you know, they're all being made more or less in the same way. But the newer model probably doesn't, and certainly the new 4K ones don't as well. There are 55, I think, and 65-inch versions of the 4K OLEDs. And those actually have the ability, if they don't already, they will get a firmware update to be able to do high dynamic range, which would be one good reason to get a 4K, in this case, the LG OLED. So I would consider that. I'm trying to remember the prices now. The 55 is, I'll have to go look that up. I'll get that to you. Okay, here we go. Compter in the chat room is saying the EG9100 is the 2015 1080p OLED. Thank you very much, Compter. Really appreciate that. But I don't know what its price is. Compter, maybe you know. This is a really good thing about the chat room. I hope everyone's tuned in there, because there's a ton of them. There's no flat OLED at 1080p. And what do you think about curved TVs? Have you had any chance to look at them?
I haven't. I've gamed a little bit with a curved monitor at a friend's house, but that's a computer monitor, and that's more for gaming, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't think it would bother me too much. I mean, I think in some cinemas, if you go to the movies, the backdrop is slightly curved, at least some of the ones that I've seen.
Yes, that's true. In a commercial cinema, the screen is, in fact, curved. But you're in an audience, you're in an auditorium that has 100, 200, 300 people in it, which is a different situation than when you're at home and you're watching with several people at home. I personally don't like curved screens, and I'll have to talk more about that when we come back. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
Let's fly to the moon, shall we? Or at least to the land of audio video geekery. It's Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to go right back to the phone, and Dave in Riverside has been holding the longest. Dave, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thank you, Scott. Thank you. I live in an apartment complex, so my neighbors are in very close proximity to me. But in spite of that, I have a full surround system and a 42-inch Sony.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't use the sound system.
Mm. Paper thin walls, eh?
Because of the apartment complex.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just wish my neighbors that moved in from time to time would leave their audio equipment somewhere else. like on a different planet.
Yeah, okay, all right. Maybe on the moon.
So anyway, I was just wondering if there was any kind of a manufacturer that put out a headphone that was able to approximate anything like a surround effect.
Well, the answer is yes, as a matter of fact. There are a couple ways to go about that. There are a number of algorithms, I'll call them, that simulate surround sound in normal headphones, just regular old everyday headphones, whatever you might have lying around the house. Right. And one of them is DTS. They make a thing called DTS Headphone X. And that will do exactly what you're asking for in any set of headphones, but it has to be implemented in an AV receiver. You know, and so, and there aren't very many yet that, that have that. Another algorithm that does that is Dolby headphone. And there may be, there are more AV receivers that have that. But I'll bet you, I'd be willing to wager that your AV receiver probably doesn't have those.
I'm looking at my Panasonic AV receiver, and it says digital DTS something on it.
That's Dolby Digital and DTS. Those are the surround formats that it probably decodes. I'd be willing to wager it doesn't have one of these formats. Now, there are several headphones that actually have multiple drivers, actual multiple speakers in them. Those are mostly intended for gaming applications. I think Turtle Beach makes them. Turtle Beach, now that I'm thinking about it, might actually have a set of headphones with DTS Headphone X built into them. So it wouldn't need to be in your receiver. So that's one thing to look at. A company called Mosaix, M-O-Z-A-E-X, makes a set of headphones with actually multiple drivers in them that give you this surround sound, but it's pretty expensive. I saw it a couple of years ago at Cedia. I'm pretty sure they still make it, but it's probably very expensive. Then there's the Smith Realizer, and this is the Rolls-Royce of headphone surround simulation. It's a box that you plug any headphone into, and it will simulate surround in your headphones, but it's $3,000 plus.
Yikes.
Yeah. So that's probably not practical. I would say, let's see if anybody in the chat room has any idea about what else we might do with this situation, because one thing might be, I wonder if they make a DTS-X or a Dolby headphone external box. Let me look into that, and I'll see if I can find it, and I'll talk about it if I can. But those are some of the options that I know about, and if the chat room comes up with something, then we may be able to help you even more. So keep listening.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, let's see. Let's see if Heather can tell me who I should talk to next.
Yeah, let's go to Brent in Eastvale, California.
Brent in Eastvale. That's line 5, and that's that button. Hey, Brent. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Enjoying your show.
Thank you so much. How can I help you?
Well, I had maybe a fairly simple question. I have AT&T U-verse. And the HD package, and on live programming, football games, TV shows, etc., the sound will cut out from time to time. But I don't seem to have the same thing like if I'm watching something on one of the movie channels. I have a Denon surround system that just a couple of years old, and I was just wondering if you'd heard of anybody else having this problem with U-verse.
I have not. Particularly if it's only on a certain channel and not on another channel. That's very odd. That would lead me to believe that it's a problem at what's called the head end, at their end of the chain, not at your end. If you got it on every single channel, then I would say maybe your receiver, your box is faulty in some way.
But I get it on more than one channel, but it seems like if we're watching a movie channel or something, the sound will be real good through the in the movie. But if I'm watching football games, if I'm watching just network television, stuff like that,
really,
the sound will cut out.
Huh. Well, I gotta tell you, that's a puzzlement. 'Tis a puzzlement, as they say.
Thank you, Monty Python.
Indeed. Very good. You got that reference. you've stumped me. I would say the thing to do, and I don't know how good AT&T customer service is, but I would call them and report this to them. Because if it's happening intermittently and it's happening only on certain channels, you know, football, local TV, broadcast TV, but not on movie channels. That sounds like a problem at their end.
Okay, well, I'll go back to them. I was just kind of hoping you'd say, oh, yeah, do change this setting.
It might be. It might be. It might be something simple as that, although I tend to doubt it. Because, I mean, what setting would you want to set so that, you know, the sound cut out sometimes? I can't imagine. Anyway, so sorry I couldn't help you more, but I think the best solution there is to call AT&T and say, hey, what's going on here?
Okay, I'll do that. And, again, really enjoyed your show today.
Thank you. Thanks so much, and thanks for calling in.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Marsworm in the chat room is saying the only wireless surround digital headphones that he found is a model MDR-DS6500 that looks like a Sony with Dolby Digital, Dolby Pro Logic, 2X, DTS EX. That's kind of interesting. I'll have to look that one up. We don't have too much time. We may be able to start a call. Might have to take it over.
We can always get started and make them wait through the news. Robbie in Long Beach is wondering what happens when he streams Netflix.
Good gracious. Let's talk to Robbie in Long Beach. Hey, Robbie, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much.
You bet.
So I have a Philips TV, and normal, you know, movies and cable watching, the volume is usually around 30-35%. When I stream Netflix through the native app, I have to get it up to about 90 to be able to hear the dialogue.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Now, that's the native app within the TV?
Correct.
Do you happen to have another device, like a Roku or most devices have Netflix on them? Do you happen to have another device that has Netflix on it?
I do.
Well, what I would do if I were you is I would listen to that one and see if you have the same problem. Let's talk about that after the break a little bit. If you can hang on, this is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
We'll have more on the Tech Guy program in just a bit with Scott Wilkinson. Meanwhile, let me remind you that our show today brought to you by Gazelle, a great place to go to buy and to sell. We've talked for a long time about how great it is to sell your used gadgets to Gazelle, the trusted online marketplace. Trade in your old device for cash and get a check, a PayPal credit, an Amazon gift card. Just go right now, in fact, and find out how much your device is worth. All quotes are guaranteed for 30 days. That means you have 30 days to decide. You ready to buy the iPad Pro, but not exactly sure you want it? Well, at least now get a quote on the price that you could get for the iPad Pro, and then you can decide later. You have 30 days. That's plenty of time to decide, buy, transfer your data over, and then send it to Gazelle. The nice thing is Gazelle pays the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. In fact, while you're getting a box, why not throw more in? Old iPhones, even broken iPhones and iPads, Samsung phones, Blackberries, tablets from Google and Samsung and Microsoft, just a huge variety of old gadgets. It'd be silly to throw those into the drawer when it'd be like throwing a $100 bill into your drawer when you could get real money for those old gadgets. Now, you might wonder what happens to the great gadgets, the best gadgets that are sold to Gazelle. Well, they'll sell them. Yeah, it's a great place to go to buy used gadgets. The gadgets are in a variety of conditions, and you get to choose, by the way. If you want to get saved the most, you can get the certified like new. But actually, those are the most expensive, certified like new. But if you want to save a little bit more, you could get something that's in a, you know, a little slightly used condition, a little bit, shows some signs of love and a previous owner, but will save you a huge amount. That's great, you know, for a replacement phone for your kids, or if you need a stopgap, or if you want an unlocked phone you could take on the road with you. Gazelle sells those too. In fact, all of Gazelle's devices not only have passed a rigorous 30-point inspection, they have a 30-day return policy, and they're sold without a carrier contract. So that means you can get a great device for a great price and use it how you want to. Go to Gazelle.com right now. See what your old gadget's worth, or buy a new replacement gadget. Gazelle.com. Now back to Scott Wilkinson and the Tech Guy.
Well, hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, who's away visiting his son at college today. He'll be back tomorrow, hopefully none the worse for wear, after visiting his son at the fraternity. We shall see, won't we? He might stroll in here and go, oh.
I'm never doing a keg stand again.
But meanwhile, we get to talk about home theater, audio, video, all kinds of cool stuff like that. I am delighted to be here with you and talking about that. Last hour, we were talking with Robbie, and I believe he is still on the line. Robbie, you still with us?
Still with us.
Excellent. Excellent. So you had a problem with the Netflix app in your Philips TV where it was much lower in volume and you really had to crank it to get it going. Right. Now, I asked you at the end of the last segment if you had another device, like a Roku or something that had Netflix on it, and you said yes. And then my next question would be, have you tried that, and does it have the same problem?
I haven't tried that.
Well, that would be the first thing I would do.
I was hoping there was a fix for the native app. That way I don't have to switch back and forth.
Yeah, I understand. I do understand. You don't want to do that. Do you have things connected in through an AV receiver?
No, it's straight into HDMI ports into the back of the TV.
Oh, the Roku, you mean?
Right.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Well, as an experiment, as a troubleshooting experiment, that's the one thing I would do to see if it's the same thing.
I'll give it a try then.
You know, otherwise, you know, go into the audio settings and or into the menu system somewhere. There might be some sort of control that changes that. I kind of doubt it, but I wouldn't be sure. I haven't looked at a Philips TV in quite a while. But the first thing I would do would be to try the Roku. And if that does the same thing, if it's still really low on Netflix, try another service as well, you know, like YouTube or something, and see what that does.
YouTube seems to work fine.
Oh, okay.
Through the native app. So, I mean, I'll try the Roku. And
yeah, maybe something in the app. It may be in the TV that isn't quite right. And there may be some setting in there, but I tend to doubt it, in which case, you know, you might have to, you know, switch over to the other input to watch the Roku, to watch Netflix, which is a great thing to watch. I watch it all the time.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Okay. Let's see. Who we got next, Heather? Oh, I know.
Bob the Cable Guy.
Bob the Cable Guy. All right. Bob the Cable Guy. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. What's going on?
Hey, man. So you've got something that might be helpful here to one of the previous callers, eh?
Yeah, I guess he was having audio cutting in and out, and he didn't know if it was his equipment or his provider.
Mm-hmm.
And most people nowadays have a DVR, so if you can record the problem and play it back, chances are it's coming from your provider.
Well, that's a great idea. And, of course, AT&T UVerse does have a DVR built into its receiver that you have in your home. So that's a fantastic idea. Record the channel that has the audio dropouts, and if it plays back that way, then it's absolutely coming from the provider.
Exactly.
Yeah, great idea. Thank you so much.
Okay, have a good day.
All right, you too. All right, I wanted to mention something earlier. We talked about surround sound in headphones, and there's a relatively new thing that I had forgotten about that, of course, someone in the chat room reminded me, and I'm so glad that they did. This is called Out of Your Head. It's software from a guy named Darren Fong, F-O-N-G, and his website is fongaudio.com. And he has written this software that actually simulates the effect of having surround speakers around your head while wearing any normal pair of headphones. So that is another thing that I definitely recommend you check out. I heard a very early version of it, and it was definitely in the development stages. But and I haven't heard it more recently, and I wish I now will get a chance to hopefully do that, because he's made some serious improvements, and a lot of people are telling me, man, this thing is great. And it's probably a lot less expensive than the Smith Realizer, that's for sure. Anyway, so that's just another idea for that and something well worth pursuing. Okay, let's see. Who we got next here, Heather?
David in Palm Beach, Florida.
David in Palm Beach, Florida, of course. Let me push all the right buttons. David, welcome to the show. Did I push the right button? Maybe I didn't. Testing 1, 2, 3. Uh-oh. Looks like I don't have... Oh, wrong button. David, have I got you?
You got me now, bro.
All right. Thanks so much. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
First, let me tell you, in my opinion, you're doing a yeoman's job
today. Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot to me. I really appreciate it.
Well, keep credit where credit's due, right?
Well, I try to myself, and I sure appreciate... appreciate hearing that. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got my ham license 57 years ago.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm 16. I'll be 69 Christmas.
Happy birthday.
I'm just hoping I make it that
way. Well, don't we all?
But, you know, I read an article online recently about the OLEDs,
mm-hmm.
and that a company, I think it was LG, but I could be wrong, had come up with a manufacturing process that made it economical, I'm going to say, and that's a, you know.
A relative term.
Yeah, but anyhow... I'm looking for another television,
mm-hmm.
and I'm caught between 4K
mm-hmm.
and OLED, mm-hmm. and help.
Well, you don't have to choose between them because LG makes 4K OLEDs. They're pretty expensive. I believe the 55-inch is in the $3,000 range, and the 65-inch is in the $5,000 range. I'm pretty sure that's right. Somebody in the chat room will correct me if I'm incorrect on that. But that's pretty expensive. But OLED, there are 1080p OLEDs. We were talking about that in the last hour, and somebody in the chat room reminded me that the 55-inch EG9100 OLED, which is 1080p, is $2,000. So that's getting closer to what mere mortals can afford. And you will not find better picture quality than OLED on a flat panel TV, period. You just won't find it. So if you have the financial wherewithal, that is definitely a fantastic way to go. Beautiful picture.
If I understand you correctly, 1080p... which is basically what I have now,
mm-hmm.
but the OLED is so far superior in its quality of picture
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, that's not a bad choice, you know?
No, it really isn't. It is by far the best picture quality in a flat panel out there today. Now, okay. Then you have to choose whether or not you want a curved screen or a flat screen. And I myself prefer flat screens. And
so do I.
And LG's 1080p OLEDs are not. They are curved. You can get a flat 4K OLED from LG, and that's what I would recommend if you can afford it. It's just a stunning picture. It's really beautiful.
I am, while I'm of meager needs to resources, I also am very high on desire, so.
Welcome to the club.
I know.
Listen, I'm sorry. Hang on 1 second. We'll be right back. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, sitting in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, it's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, rocking out here to some fine tunes brought to us by Nathan Staten. I'm filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, as he parties with his son at the fraternity at college. Oh, man. Pardon me while I rock out here. But actually, we have a phone call still. We're still talking to, I believe, David in Palm Beach. David, are you still with us?
I'm here.
Excellent. So we were talking about OLEDs and 4K, and do you have to choose? And the answer is no, but it costs a lot of money. I saw in the chat room somebody said that the EF9500 series is – he's seen – who was that? UJ in the chat room said $3,000 to $4,000 for, I assume, the 65-inch. So it would be less than that for the 55-inch. If you can afford that one, that's the way to go over 1080p, A, because the 1080p OLEDs are curved, and I don't like them.
Yeah, I agree.
And B, the 4K have the capability of doing high dynamic range, which I was talking about in the last hour. And that, to me, is the biggest improvement to television since high definition, maybe even since color. It's just tremendous. It just looks wonderful. And so if you can swing it, that's the way to go. You would have the best flat panel experience available today, period.
All right. Well, it sounds like OLED is a must-have.
Well, you know, for the very best quality, it is, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got a 1080p now.
An OLED?
No.
Oh.
I wouldn't be calling you if it was.
Okay, all right.
So the OLED is a must-have. The 4K would be nice for the future.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
The price is within reason for me. So
okay. Boy, that's great. If you can swing it, that would be an enviable display system you got there. That's
well, I'll have to discuss it with my cats.
Yeah, make sure they're on board.
Yeah, it's not like I got a wife or anybody looking over my shoulder.
Well, so. Okay, then, you know.
I tried that 3 times and I just couldn't get it right.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, some people can do it, other people can't, but, you know. I'd say, you know, if you've got the discretionary income or the discretionary funds to do it, boy, you will not be unhappy. I can guarantee.
Yeah, well, I live a humble life out here, so.
Yeah, so, you know, treat yourself, you know?
Yeah. I very appreciate all your time and your advice, and I would tell Leo some amateur with 57 years said hi.
Okay, I will.
Right,
thanks so much. Bye-bye. All right, Heather, who should we talk to?
Elliot in Boston is next.
Oh, Boston. I'm heading there for Thanksgiving. Oop, let me push the right button. Elliot, how are you doing?
Good. I'm a 12-year-old, by the way.
Wow, excellent. Welcome to the show. Fantastic.
Sweet, thanks. I was just wondering if there's, like, some sort of a box that I could use to, like, record what I have on my TV. Like if I want to record, like, what I have on my DVR.
Oh, man.
Show. Like, they were talking about this on the Screensavers, and they had, like, a box that you couldn't buy, but it's like they discontinued it.
Yeah, that is a really tough thing. That's a really difficult thing to do because the people who make the DVRs really don't want you to do that. They make it really hard. And they make sure that you don't have the opportunity to do that. I've been trying to find a way to do that myself, to tell you the truth, because I've got 2 or 3 DVRs that, you know, I upgraded at one point to something else. And how do I get that stuff off of there onto something, some way that I can watch it? Well,
yeah, don't they like put in fake USBs?
Fake USBs?
Yeah, like the fake USB port.
Oh, no, they're not fake exactly. That is usually for service. Right. So if you have a problem, then a technician will come out and hook into that USB with their computer and be able to diagnose problems that you might not be able to. That's what that's for primarily. It's not for offloading.
Mm-hmm.
The best solution that I've come up with, and this is after years and years of thinking about it, is somehow, if there's any way to take the analog signal off of the DVR, but there may it may not you may not be able to do it in high definition. Is your I assume your DVR is high definition, right?
Yeah, it's the new Verizon one.
Uh-huh. Boy, Verizon really doesn't want you to do that, and so they're going to make it really hard.
Yeah, we have composite out, though.
Only composite out, not even component, right?
We have, like, the red, green, and the
Oh, white. You do have the red, green, and blue ones. Okay. So yeah. there are several different kinds of analog outputs, analog video outputs. And the one you're describing with three jacks, three RCA jacks that are color-coded red, green, and blue, that's called component. And that technically can give you high-definition output. I wouldn't be at all surprised, however, if the DVR disables that or down-converts it to standard definition. All Blu-ray players today do that. You can't get high-definition out of a Blu-ray player from its component output, a modern one. If you have a really old one, you still can. But I think it was 2010, 2011. Somebody in the chat room can help me out on that, Mike Heiss in particular. I don't think it's certainly not possible with Blu-ray players, and it's probably not possible with yours. You can record it. You can send the analog audio, video and audio for that matter, out in standard definition, but ugh, you know, that's not a great solution either. There is no great solution that I know of. And maybe if somebody in the chat room, knows of one, then we might be able to do that, but I can't think of one. They and just also, don't. Yeah, go ahead.
Is there any other thing that I could use to like something that I could use? Just like I could. It also has an HDMI port. Is there something that I could use to record through the HDMI?
Mm-mm. No way. The HDMI is even more protected than analog out. Leo has talked about this before. Trying to record out of the analog output is called the analog hole. And the Verizon and Blu-ray players and everybody are trying to plug that analog hole because they're so afraid of piracy, which I have to agree with Leo on this. The effect that it has is mostly just penalizing us honest consumers who want a copy of what we recorded on the DVR. It's stupid. It's silly, but that's the way it is. Sorry to say.
All right, and also...
hang on a second. Got to hang on. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Can't say I've been everywhere, but I am Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I do know someone who has been everywhere, man. It's Johnny Jett, our travel expert, and he joins us by Skype right now. Hey, Johnny, welcome to the show.
Hello, Scott. Thank you. I'm the aviation geek, I guess. You're the home theater?
You're the aviation geek, yeah, with a travel geek. You only travel by plane, or do you do other things like train and boats? And
I do everything. Yeah. Mostly plane, obviously, but I take the bus. I've taken the bus. All over. I'll take taxis, Ubers, boats. I was in Asia last couple weeks ago. I was taking tuk-tuks,
wow,
rickshaws, you name it.
Wow, that is so cool. Camels.
Camels in the Middle East.
As Leo says, anything with a chip in it, you say anything that gets you from point A to point B.
That's right.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, I understand last week you guys were talking about finding great deals for travel this holiday season. Thanksgiving's coming up, Christmas right after that. A lot of people travel. So,
for sure.
But you only got through about half of what you were doing. Now
I did. So I can do a quick recap, and then we can finish off on them. And I also just tweeted it out.
Excellent.
My handle is Johnny Jett. In case anyone wants to follow along or look at it later, if you're driving, just take your time. It's all right there. You don't need to write anything down. So
follow along in your hymnals.
Yes. Yeah, so I always talk about you got to be flexible. You're not going to find any cheap deals. you know, if you want to fly peak days, you know, especially for Thanksgiving, the Wednesday before, the Sunday after. So you got to use those wisely. In my post, and we talked about it last week, have the dates, which ones you should target and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go over that. And then, you know, I also said stay away from the low-cost carriers. Although they might look like a great deal, it might end up costing you a lot more, especially if you want to have a seat assignment or if you want to check bags, you know, or if you want to use the bathroom. You
know? Or they put a little coin thing in the next to the bathroom.
Ryanair keeps, you know, threatening to do that. But yeah, anyway, always, you know, think about that. And I, you know, if you're going to check bags, especially during Christmas, you know, look at Southwest Airlines. And the only way you're going to find Southwest Airlines is by going to their website, southwest.com.
Mm-hmm. That's the and one they, I usually use.
Well, because they allow two free check bags.
Exactly.
So you got to keep that in mind. And I also talk about, you know, keeping, you know, the consider the time of day.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people say, I want to leave at 5 o'clock after work or school.
Oh, man.
You know, don't do that. Just do any time because, you know, sometimes if you leave early in the morning, you can save a few $100s. And if you have a family, it's worth it. So don't just put in any time.
Yeah.
And I talk about alternate airports all the time. You know, you live in L.A., so you know we have Long Beach, Burbank, you know, and San Francisco has Oakland and San Jose.
Yep.
Florida has, you know, Fort Lauderdale. So all the major cities usually have an alternate airport.
Right. I go out of Burbank most when I can because it's so much better than LAX. And LAX at Christmas or Thanksgiving is a total zoo. It must be the same at other major airports.
Well, it is. But actually, I just made a commercial for LAX.
Oh, no
actually,
kidding.
I just tweeted it out. But if you know, if you do LAX right, it's a great airport because it's a horseshoe. It's so easy to get around. You just the big problem with LAX is the traffic when you're going into it. So you just got to leave plenty of time in advance. But what's great about LAX is that they're putting in, you know, they're bringing all these local restaurants and shops from downtown LA or LA and bringing it into the airport. So and they're pumping a lot of money into it. So anyway, I tweeted out a video so you can check that out. But I also talk about, you know, using search tools. There's not one website out there. So, again, you have to use southwest.com just to find Southwest flights.
Right.
I have a really cool search engine on my booking – on my website where, you know, it brings up Expedia, TripAdvisor, HipMonk, all these different ones that you need to search. And what's cool about the one I have is that you just put in your city pairs and your dates and you don't have to keep doing that. But you need to check them all. Kayak, whatever. Not one of them has the best deal.
Now, is that what is the website? What is your website?
JohnnyJet.com.
How easy.
JohnnyJet.com. One T. I'm not related to Joan.
Okay.
And we always talk about, you know, doing signing up for fare alerts. And I have that listed. We talked about that last week, so I don't want to go into it. But that's a great way to get notified when the price drops.
Mm.
And what's really nice is that a lot of people don't realize that the airlines require anyone flying out of the U.S. to either hold your reservation for 24 hours without payment or to allow you to book the reservation and refund it within 24 hours. So if you find a really good deal but you're not quite sure, you can book it and then cancel it, you know, within 24 hours.
Wow.
And so that's what I've been doing all week. Actually, I'm flying to Miami soon, and there was a flight for $89 to go from – actually, you can buy one right now for tomorrow to go Miami to L.A. to Miami or vice versa.
Wow,
for
$89 bucks?
On American.
Wow.
So I kept holding it every single day to see if I could get the actual flight time I wanted. I wanted a certain flight. They only had like the really early ones.
Yeah.
And I just kept holding it, and then I would cancel it and then rebook it every day. And I ended up getting the one I wanted.
Wow, so, that's fantastic. Now, that takes a little effort on your part.
It does take effort, but, you know, finding these deals.
Yeah?
You know,
how much? Oh, yeah, $89 bucks. Jeez.
$89, you can't beat that. I mean, you know, normally it's like $300, $400 at least one way.
Wow, fantastic.
So I also, last week we didn't talk about using your frequent flyer miles or credit cards or points, credit card points. And you know, around the holidays, they make it almost impossible unless you're flexible with the dates.
Mm.
Except with the credit card points. There is no blackout dates on those, so you can pay for your your ticket, your hotel, your theater tickets, whatever it has to do with travel, Disneyland, and then you can get credit with it using your points. With using airline miles is much more difficult around that time. Although I just booked a ticket for my wife and her mother, for her mother to fly LA to Toronto the day after Thanksgiving.
So on the Friday.
on the Friday. That's a great day to travel. So again, you got to be flexible.
Yeah, yeah. What you talked about in terms of credit card points makes me think of the Capital One ads, you know, where they say, oh, they restrict you for this and that and this and that, but Capital One, you can use it everything, every day. Is that something real, or is that just...
No, I mean, Capital One, they actually have a great program like that, but a lot of the other credit cards, I'm a big fan of SPG Amex, also Barclay Card. The cards these days, you want to get the ones with a chip. So that way, right, if you're traveling overseas, and actually you're starting to see this here in the U.S., Target's now doing it, Trader Joe's, you know, if you have a chip on your card, they're going to make you pay it that way. But overseas, you know, a lot of the places like train stations, there's no one attending it. So the only way you can pay or a gas station is with a chip and PIN. So it's very important to get a card with a chip and PIN and not chip and signature.
Right. Right.
I've missed a train before in Monaco because I couldn't buy a ticket and it was coming. And my card back then did not have it.
Wow. Wow. So, well, as Leo says, he covers everything with a chip in it. So maybe he'll start covering credit cards now.
And then I also talk about, you know, using a travel agent. You know, everyone thinks travel agents are dead. Not at all. Travel agents. No way. Travel agents. If you can find a good travel agent, you know, they're amazing. They can get you free upgrades. If something goes wrong, if there's a volcano in Iceland or you know, big snowstorm, instead of trying to stay online on the phone for hours trying to get through, you just call your travel agent and they'll do all the dirty work for you.
Wow.
So always look at that. And I also talk about speaking to a human. There's a website called gethuman.com. Which lists all the different prompts you need to do. So if, let's say you're calling American Airlines, it'll tell you to hit, I don't know, star or five or two, whatever. I'm not even sure. I'm not looking at it right now.
Right.
But it'll tell you every airline, hotel.
Wow, this is great.
What number is the prompt? You don't sit on hold and going, yes, agent. Agent.
Representative. I do that all the time.
Yeah,
this right here is worth the whole trip for me right now.
All right.
I gotta tell you, man.
No
that
problem.
Is awesome.
And it's not just travel, those guys. Although it was started by someone who had a travel website.
Mm-hmm.
And then hidden cities. You know, airlines do not like this, but there's a website out there called Skip Lagged. SKIPLAGGED.
Say that again. Skip
Lagged.
Lagged.
Yep.
Okay.
So, United was suing these guys. I think Orbitz was too. So, it's a 21-year-old kid who created the site that shows you, which cities to book your ticket through and then get off the plane. You book a one-way ticket. So let's say you want to go L.A. to Cleveland, but it's $600. This will tell you to book a trip from L.A. to Buffalo, but the plane stops in Cleveland for $200. You don't check a bag. You get off in Cleveland. It only costs $200.
Wow.
But airlines do not like that. They can take away your miles, so you have to be very careful. And I'm not recommending it.
Fantastic. Well, wow, you're a font of information, and it's quite remarkable. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, I appreciate it, and you're doing a great job. I know it can't be easy to fill Leo's shoes.
Yeah, those are hard shoes to fill, for sure. Anyway, for some reason, somehow...
How are we doing, Nathan? Are we good?
Nathan, how are we doing?
We're good. You can keep rolling.
Okay. I didn't hear the music.
Yeah, I didn't hear the music. Usually they cut me off by now. So
yeah, exactly.
If you need more, I got more.
50 seconds.
Yeah, but
Karen and I were watching the clock.
Right. I saw
50
it.
Seconds.
I'm sorry. Say again, Nathan.
50 seconds.
50 seconds. Okay. Till when? Till we start again? My clock says 100. There it is. Oh, my goodness. Well, this is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett, thank you so much.
Thanks, Scott. Great job.
Oh, yeah. This is taking me right back to high school. Donovan, I love it. That was one of the first concerts I ever saw live at the Hollywood Bowl was Donovan. Yeah, when I was in high school. That was amazing. Yeah. Hey, this is Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And We had a little confusion there in the last segment, but I think we're back on track now. We got another call to answer. I think it's line three. I'm going to push the right buttons, I hope. And Katrina in Mission Viejo, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What are the best portable speakers for the price?
Portable, by that you mean battery powered, take it anywhere, that sort of thing?
Pretty much, mm-hmm. Yeah. I looked on CNET and I saw Flip 3 was good and the Jawbone Big Jamboss, but there's so many
So
many. You know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's really tough. I tell you what, I've got a few in that I'm looking at right now for review. One of them is from a company called BenQ, which is spelled B-E-N-Q. And it's called the Trivolo. And it is the world's first, as far as I know, electrostatic portable Bluetooth speaker. And what that basically means, electrostatic speakers operate a little differently from regular speakers. They have a very thin, fairly large diaphragm that vibrates in response to the audio signal. And this speaker is really cool because those electrostatic panels kind of, they fold in and you can get a little traveling case with it. And then you fold it out and the low frequencies are handled by a more conventional type of speaker in the main body of this thing with these little wings that come out for the electrostatics. Really sounds very good. I'm trying to look up exactly how much it is. Probably $200 or $300, but I'll double check that. If you're looking for something real for cheaper than that, that's a good question. The other one that I have recent experience with is from a company called Riva Audio, R-I-V-A, and they make a portable speaker called the Turbo, which really, really sounds great. And I have to find out how much that one is, too. I'm going to do a little research on that. If you keep listening, I will be able to tell you about those. I must admit, those are probably both in the couple of $100 range.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just take a look at Riva Audio and see. Yeah, the Riva Turbo X is $350.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, which is pretty expensive. BenQ Trivolo, T-R-E-V-O-L-O. I'm seeing it online for less, $250, $260, something like that. That ain't cheap either, but though, you know, I'm afraid I go for quality. I'll spend more money on quality.
Okay. Is there anything that's, I'm not going to use it for big, crazy parties. It's mostly for indoors and for background music and mm-hmm. maybe normal volume, but nothing crazy. Anything else you can recommend for me that's around $100 ranges?
Around the $100 range? I don't know of any off the top of my head. Let's see if the chat room knows anything. I bet you they do. They always do. They always know plenty of stuff. Let's see here. Anybody in the chat room? Compter is saying Bose, and I definitely do not recommend Bose. People think of Bose a lot because they have a great marketing department.
Yeah.
And their noise-canceling headphones are among the best, period. I that's what I use. But in terms of speakers, I'm not a big fan. Just not a big fan. So let's see. For simple listening, Compu386 is saying, for simple listening under $100, I sure like my UE Mini Boom. UE Ultimate Ears is probably what that means. That would be another possibility. Let me do some looking around here, maybe in one of the breaks, and see if I can find something for you. So if you'll keep listening, that would be great.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks for calling.
Okay.
Appreciate it. I did find something in the chat room. Compu386 and a few others have mentioned something about Bluetooth speakers. In particular, the where is it? Here it is. Logitech, which we were talking about the Logitech Harmony remotes before, but for $90, there's the Logitech UE Mini Boom. Which was reviewed on The Wirecutter by Brent Butterworth, friend of mine, a fellow journalist. He's been on my podcast a number of times. And he looks like he recommends it. And so that would be a really good one. Let's see. Amazon Basics BTV1, he says, is also great. $50 from Amazon. So that's pretty good. The Denon, oh, here you go. Denon DSB 200 Envia, $200 from Amazon. Now we're getting into the price range of the BenQ, the BenQ Trevolo, which I really like. I don't know any of these other ones, but I do trust Brent Butterworth very much. He does a great job reviewing speakers on the Wirecutter and elsewhere. So thanks to the chat room for suggesting that. That's really great. Okay, we got time for another call. Heather, who do you think I should talk to next?
David in San Diego is up.
David in San Diego. He is line number four. There he is. David, how you doing?
Hi. I have a simple question. There's a company called Spectral High-End Audio. They've been working on their preamplifiers for like 35 years. I think they've been in the business for like 40 years. And their opinion of their product with regards to the things that they make is that the heart and soul of their audio system, and I'm interested in building a two-channel audio system, mm-hmm. is that the preamplifier is really the key point in the system. Your amplifiers are going to, you know, boost the signal, whatever you put through the preamplifier. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, is this also true of a multi-channel surround sound system, which, of course, is your forte, which is the, you know, sound array for, you know, all the special effects that go on in movies and soundtracks and dialogue and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that also true of a multi-channel system?
I would have to say so. Yes, absolutely. Okay. The preamp is really the brains of the system. You take your various source devices, like your Blu-ray player, your cable box or your satellite receiver, your Roku box or other streaming box. You plug those all into the preamp. And an AV receiver is basically a preamp with some amplifiers built into the same box, but the principle is the same. You plug all these sources into the preamp, and then the preamp does all the work. So if it gets a Dolby Digital signal, it decodes that and sends the signal out to the right speakers. It can also simulate different acoustic environments and so on like that. So it is the center, the brain of the system, and it's critically important. Absolutely.
By the way, for the future of two-channel audio, if you will, mm-hmm. I was looking at investing in one of those high-end digital computers, not your PCs that Leo likes to talk about where you USB connect, but we're talking like one company that comes to mind is Beatis, which is BAETIS Audio. Hmm. They make a reference computer that is connected AES/EBU into a dedicated DAC like the Berkeley Audio Design Alpha Reference DAC. And now you're talking, you know, some pretty big bucks for very good quality sound. And then it's just the management of all those digital files, because we're talking not just gigabytes, but terabytes of library digital music.
Sure.
And to me, it's like when I'm looking at the sort of magazines that come out that I read into, mm-hmm. it seems like the evolution of high quality digital music is so much evolving rather than just relying on the old analog standard.
Well, it sure is. It sure is. Hang on a sec. Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this.
We'll have more with Scott Wilkinson in just a bit on the Tech Guy Show, but first I want to tell you a little bit about my new printer. Oh, I love my Epson. Those great precision core printers are so fast. 40 million dots per second. They spit out a page every few seconds. And it's done. Crisp black printing, as good as laser. High-speed, vivid colors. And then they do things lasers can't do. Auto two-sided printer, 30-page auto document feeder, easily wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. They're more energy efficient. There's no startup time. I can go on and on. Epson, they're great. And now, oh, man, add the new EcoTank, and you've got enough ink in that printer for 2 years of printing. Take a look at the EcoTank ET4550, wireless, all-in-one, doesn't use ink cartridges. It features an innovative, refillable ink tank. They could print enough, up to about 8,500 color pages. That's about 50 ink cartridge sets, about 2 years, in the box. Epson, All 8 GoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value with ultra-low-cost replacement inks. Now you have the freedom to print without running out of ink. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, your office, or your work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new EcoTank printers from Epson. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank. And we thank Epson so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Epson, exceed your vision. And now on we go with Scott Wilkinson.
Well, hey, how you doing there? Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, ready to take your calls at 888-888-ASK-LEO. That is translated into phone speak, 888-827-5536. And she and I are sitting here rocking out to the music. It's so cool.
You can actually dance to the Tech Guy theme.
Isn't that great? And you can dance. It's got a beat and you can dance to it. You know, we got a couple of visitors in the studio today, Mark and Aya. Thank you. I'll remember that by the end of the show, I'm sure. And Mark asked me a really interesting question that is very basic but really important. And we started to touch on it in the last hour when we were talking about pre-pros or preamp processors. And he asked me, I don't really understand what an AVR is, what an AV receiver is. And this is a great question because it's a fundamental aspect of all home theaters, really. So the AV receiver is simply a combination of a preamp processor, which, as I said before, takes in all your source devices and gets the signal in and does what it needs to do with that signal, and then sends it to the power amplifiers, which are in the same box, and the power amplifiers make the audio signal bigger and send that onto the speakers. And so it really is the central switching station and power source of the entire home theater. It powers the speakers. It takes in the signals, does what it does with them, amplifies them, sends them out to the speakers. And that's what an AVR is, and that's what it does. And most home theaters, that's what they use as their central piece of equipment. You can separate those two things, which is kind of what we were talking about in the last hour, where you have a preamp processor and a separate box of amplifiers. That's generally more expensive, generally higher quality, generally. I'm talking very generally here. And as your amplifiers don't change much over time. You know, they're just amplifying. That's all they're doing. They're taking an electrical signal and making it bigger. But preamp processors will change over time. We've got new surround formats. We've got all kinds of new technologies and features and so on that if you have an AVR, if you want to replace it with something that has all those new features, you're going to replace those amps as well. And it's kind of wasted money, in my opinion. So if you can, if you separate those out, this is what we often call separates. Then you can replace the preamp processor when a new technology comes out that you really want. Keep your amps because they still work just fine. There's nothing's going to change there. And then you have all the latest and greatest without having to give up the amps in the previous AVR, buy a new set of amps. You don't need to spend that kind of money. Now, granted, preamp processors by themselves tend to be a little on the expensive side because they're generally considered to be a sort of higher-end product. But, you know, if you buy amps and you really like them, then you're keeping them. The other interesting thing to do is to buy powered speakers. There are these things called active speakers or powered speakers, which have the amplifier built into the box of the speaker. Then all you really need is a pre-pro, what we call a pre-pro, a preamp processor. And that will send what's called a line-level signal out to the speakers directly, and the speakers will amplify their own signal. That's a kind of a more specialized approach. Some people do it. And in fact, on the Screensavers, which is the podcast that I will be guest hosting later this afternoon, we're going to be talking with Tony Grimani. who has a new set of speakers that are powered, that have this exact same approach, that they put the amplifier inside the speaker so that you don't have to worry about where the amp goes or anything like that. There's also some thought to the fact that if you put the amplifiers in with all the electronics, the pre-processing electronics, you have to be pretty careful about how you shield things, right? Because amplifiers make a big signal, and that will make a big electromagnetic field within this box, and that might interfere with certain things. So if you separate them out, you're lowering the risk of separating them out. So that is my short little bit about AV receivers. You know, before we go on, I should tell you that in a slightly self-serving manner, I should say, that my day gig is as the editor of audio AVSforum.com. Audio Video Science is what AVS stands for. And this is the world's largest online community of audio video enthusiasts, or what we might call geeks. And I am very pleased and happy and honored and privileged to be the editor of that forum. Now, I don't go in and edit forum posts. You know what a forum is, right? It's a users getting together and chatting with each other, asking questions, answering questions, and so on. And this AVS forum started in 1999, and it has grown to over a million members. So it's huge, and I can't possibly, you know, read everything that's on there. But what I do is provide what's called editorial content. So as a professional journalist, I have been for close to 30 years all told, I write reports from trade shows and CES and CEDIA and various things like that. And I write articles about various things. And my colleague Mark Henninger and I both do that. And Ralph Potts writes reviews of Blu-rays. And his reviews are very, very good, I think, because not only does he review the movie itself, he also reviews the audio and video quality of the Blu-ray. So this is really cool because audiophiles certainly do this. They have certain selections that they play for their friends, and they say, listen to how great my system is. Similarly, with a Blu-ray, you can find certain Blu-rays that have great sound quality, great picture quality, and say, look at how great my home theater is with certain demo discs that are really cool. So I value Ralph Potts's movie reviews tremendously for that regard. So I just wanted to make sure I let you know that. You probably already know the number to call if you have a question for me. It's 8888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. And we've got a bunch of calls on hold already. Heather, what would you suggest?
The one that you're going to drool over, Richard and Torrance. Here it comes.
Come to daddy, baby. Let's see. Richard in Torrance. How are you doing, man?
Hey, great. I'll get to cut to the chase really quick. In my bedrooms, I have a Pioneer Curl and a Panasonic Plasma. Love them both.
Oh, man. Already I'm drooling.
So looking for a TV for my, quote, great room, which isn't all that great. So it's going to be above the fireplace. I know you don't like that.
But there's no way to avoid that?
No way. Not the way the room's designed. My question is, I'm one of those one percenters, and I heard you mention the Vizio reference.
Mm-hmm.
And I have looked at the LG flat OLED.
Yep.
And it's $5,000 for the 65-inch list price.
Correct.
So my question is, number one, can you mount that on the wall?
Sure.
And or how's the Vizio?
Oh, man. Well, that's a really good question. I would say for absolute picture quality, I'd probably go with the OLED.
Okay.
The 65 inches, $5,000, you're right. They also make a 77. It's curved, though.
No, I don't want a curve.
You don't want a curve. Good for you. Okay. We agree on that. Okay, so the 65 inch is about $5,000. The 65 inch Vizio reference series is about $6,000.
Okay.
So, you know, we're in the same ballpark.
Right.
They both produce a beautiful picture. Beautiful. I probably give the edge. Oh, you know what? I'm going to have to finish that when we get back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back after this. We'll be right back. Hey, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and we are rocking today. Love the music, Nathan. That is just great. Every bumper out of the commercials has been fantastic, and Heather and I are sitting here bouncing around, having a great old time. We were talking with Richard and Torrance about OLEDs and Vizio reference series. And since in the break, Compter in the chat room has mentioned, and very wisely so, that there's a special wall mount that you need to get from LG. And he says it's $89. But apparently they need some special kind of wall mount. Now, whether or not that can be made articulating, and by that I mean the TV can come off of the wall and maybe angle down, which is certainly what you want to do. If you're mounting it above the fireplace, you know I don't like mounting above the fireplace because it means you need to look up at the TV. But if it's in a great room and it's more for you know, your guests being there, then you know, it's maybe not quite as objectionable, okay?
Okay.
But we were going to talk about OLED versus the Vizio Reference.
Okay.
And the Vizio Reference series is an LCD TV that uses LED backlighting with a pretty new technology called quantum dots. Ah! Sounds like a James Bond movie or something. Quantum of Solace, but Quantum of Dots. And it actually produces a very wide color gamut. And the Reference series is the first and only TV available that will do a type of high dynamic range called Dolby Vision, which is the type of high dynamic range that you can see in a commercial cinema if you go to one of the 8 currently in the U.S. Commercial cinemas. It's AMC theaters. And they show high dynamic range content on a high dynamic range projector, and it is jaw-dropping, primarily, mostly. Depends on how they put it together. I've seen really good examples, and I've seen not as great examples. But in any event, the only place you can get Dolby Vision content right now is streaming from Vudu. And so that's the only place you can do it. The upcoming Ultra HD Blu-ray spec has the ability to have Dolby Vision content on it as an option. So, you know, some discs will have it, some won't. And that is as it is. But the TV itself, especially when it's playing Dolby Vision content, just looks great. But it still has the problem of if you're off axis, right? You're not directly on center. You go off axis to the side, one side or the other, and the picture quality degrades. That's true of all LCD TVs. I don't care who made them. I don't care, you know, what other qualities they have. They have this problem. It's inherent. OLEDs do not have this problem. So that's one reason to go with the OLED. It does not do Dolby Vision. With a firmware update, it will do something called SMPTE, high dynamic range, commonly, although not officially known as HDR10. And there's a lot more companies that are putting that out at the moment in the form of streaming with MGO. I think Netflix does it. Amazon does it. So there are a variety of streaming sources that will do HDR10 high dynamic range, and the LG OLEDs will take that. Oh, Compter in the chat room also says you can do that articulation with the LG mount. So,
great!
There you go.
Can you mount a soundbar with it?
You know, I don't know. That I'd have to look at in terms of whether or not you can mount a soundbar on it. The other advantage of the Vizio, Mike Heiss in the chat room told me, that comes with a soundbar built in.
Oh, kind of like my Curl.
Yeah, well,
with it underneath?
As far as I know, it's underneath. Yeah, it's not on the sides like the Curl. The Curl, the TV, the speakers are on the side, right?
Not on my Pioneer. It's not a Curl. It's just a Pioneer. And it's got a soundbar on the bottom of the TV.
Oh, okay. So it's not a Curl.
It's a Pioneer plasma.
I guess it's before the Curo days. I don't remember a Curo ever having a soundbar on the bottom. I remember them having speakers on the side.
Both the 50 and 60 inch Pioneer, and this was the last year of the Pioneer plasma TVs.
Oh, so then it must have been a Curo. I don't remember one having the soundbar on the bottom.
On the bottom, and it has really good sound for a TV. has great sound.
Yeah. Well, anytime you get speakers pointing forward on a TV, it's going to be better than what you mostly get today, which is speakers either on the back pointing backwards and firing into the wall, or possibly firing downward.
And this OLED LG is so thin, I don't even know how you would get a speaker in there.
You, I think they do put speakers in there, but I certainly wouldn't use them.
Right.
You know? You'd have – I don't know. I'll have to look and see if the LG wall mount will accommodate a
Soundbar.
Thank you. I was looking at the chat room there, actually. Mike Heiss is mentioning that the El Capitan in Burbank is the ninth theater that has Dolby Vision high dynamic range in it, but it is not a what they call a true Dolby Cinema because it doesn't have the right kind of seating, and it's not my favorite venue.
Is that Vizio high dynamic range, though, going to be supported, or are they going to just do one, for all TVs?
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand the question.
Okay, you were explaining that the Vizio has a is capable of doing the high dynamic range.
A particular type called Dolby Vision, yes.
Right, and that, is that particular type going to be the standard, or we don't know yet?
We don't know yet, and this is the problem. I mean, it is one standard that's out there. This Simpty HDR10 is another standard that's out there.
Okay.
At the recent Simpty Tech Conference, I learned of a third one. From BBC and NHK, the Japanese public broadcasting system, called HLG for Hybrid Log Gamma, which is yet a third one that's very interesting. But we're in the middle of a transition towards high dynamic range. Which one's going to win out? Are there going to be multiple ones? We don't know.
Would this LG be comparable for any of them, or no?
Only the Simpty one. The one called HDR10. I've been told by people who are in the know that the next generation of high dynamic range capable TVs are going to be able to do more than one type of high dynamic range.
Oh boy!
But at the moment, and here's where the transition becomes very frustrating. Each TV can only do one kind, and if it gets a different kind of signal, it'll either choke or it'll just ignore it, or we don't know. We're in the Wild West at the moment, and so it's difficult to say exactly what is going to happen.
Well, I have seen the OLED LG at the store, and it's a beautiful picture.
Beautiful.
Even though it's, just standard, 4K, not even 4K. I think it's a up conversion of a 1080p signal, but beautiful picture.
Yeah, it is very beautiful. Hey, thanks so much. We'll be right back. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Heather, can you believe it? We're almost done.
Where does the time go when we're talking about TVs?
I don't know.
And dancing.
Yeah, well, time always goes fast when you're dancing. So, we got another segment here. Let's see how many calls we can get in here. Who should I go to next?
Christian in Ventura on line 6.
Okay, line 6. Christian in Ventura. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. Welcome.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for taking my call. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. So a while back, I decided I needed a universal remote, mm-hmm. and I purchased one of the Harmonies from Logitech that you spoke about earlier.
Yep.
And I love it, except for one small issue.
Ooh, what's that?
It doesn't detect the auto-off sequence of my TV, so I try and start a new activity, it doesn't know to turn it on if it's off from that auto-off sequence. Is there a way to configure it to recognize that?
I'm not quite sure I know what you mean by your TV's auto-off sequence. I mean, the remote...
So, the auto-shutdown sequence, where if you're idle for a certain amount of time, it will shut itself off.
Really? What TV is that?
It's an Insignia, I know. You're not...
Okay, all right.
I'm in a low price range.
Well, okay, you're in the low price range. Okay, hey, I won't fault you for that at all. I had no idea that the Insignia TV, if it doesn't get anything for a while, it shuts itself off. That I've never heard
yes.
of.
Yes. Maybe there's a way to turn that off. But
I would go into that's the first thing I would do is go into the menu system of the TV and see if there's a way to disable the auto off after some period of inactivity.
I'll go ahead and do that.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be the first thing to do. Now, the Harmony remotes have a great feature called help. And basically, there's a button yes. called help, and you push the help button, and it tries to figure out what went wrong and fix it. And then it'll say in its little display, did that fix the problem? And you say yes or no. And if no, then it'll go through a series of questions. Is your TV on? Yes, no. If no, and it thinks it should be, it'll then go turn it on. So it's a lot easier to troubleshoot with a Harmony than it is with other systems. But your TV is presenting it with a unique challenge.
Sure. I'll look into the TV settings for that. But I have one other question related to the Harmony.
Sure.
I have different sets of inputs on my AV system, and all of them seem to have a different level of volume. Is there a way to set it up so it'll change the volume of the AV system to adapt to that?
Well, what AV receiver do you have?
It's an old Sony. I don't have the model number off the top of my head here, but yeah. Certainly no component in, just old RCA.
Oh, wow. Really old.
Yeah, over 10 years.
Okay. Well, I was thinking, you know, maybe there might be a way in the receiver's menu to do a bias or a gain control on the different inputs, you know, so that when you select input number one, its gain is set to this. And if your input number two is lower, then you might want to have a higher gain set to it to be automatic. But
okay, so it sounds like I'll look into the Sony receiver for a gain level
per input. Okay. I tend to doubt it might be there because it's so old.
Right.
But, you know, that would be the first thing I would check. And the Harmony can't do anything about that.
Okay.
Maybe you might be able to program it, now that I just think about it, to, you know, tweak the volume of the receiver when you go to watch TV or watch Roku or watch Blu-ray or whatever.
It might be able to send
a volume command to the receiver to change depending on what you do there. But that would be kind of tricky to implement.
Yeah, I'm personally a programmer myself, so I almost wish it were more programmable.
Well,
super basic before.
Then you may want to go with a URC, Universal Remote
URC?
Control. Yeah, that's another brand of Universal Remote, and it's much more programmable. If you're a programmer already, you might prefer that one because it probably has much more flexibility. The Harmony remotes are meant for people who don't want to, you know, worry about stuff like that.
Sure. Okay. Well, I'll look into URC. That sounds more interesting for my background.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Good luck. Okay. Who's next?
You have Ben in Omaha.
Ben in Omaha. That looks like line one to me, and I'm going to push the right button, I hope. Ben, hey, how you doing?
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Good. Thanks. How can I help you?
Well, I've got an over-the-air antenna that I use for my TV.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, you know, I'll be watching and all of a sudden it will lose signal. Do you know why that would be?
Well, where do you have the over-the-air antenna? Is it on your roof? Is it in a window? Is it in your house?
It's in my apartment and it just sits kind of behind the TV.
Now, generally speaking, over-the-air antennas inside your home work best when they are near a window and they are near a window that has a direct line of sight with where the transmitters are. So in Los Angeles, where I live, it's Mount Wilson. And so I have an over-the-air antenna on my roof on a rotor, and I point it towards Mount Wilson so that I get the strongest signal. Do you know where in Omaha the transmission of over-the-air signals comes from?
That I don't.
Okay. I would suggest going to antennaweb.org, and I'm going to go there right now just so that I can see.
Antennaweb.org.
And that is my go-to resource for all things antenna. Maximize your television reception. So I'll bet you'd be able to find Omaha, you know, look for Omaha and be able to figure out exactly where you need to point it. You might need to put it in another room and then get a long, it's probably connected to the TV with a coax cable. And coax can run a long distance. Now, whether or not you want coax draped through your apartment or not, it's another question. But you really want that TV to that antenna, to be as close to line of sight with where the signal is coming from as well. Mike Heiss in the chat room is also saying go to Titan TV. Let's see what Titan. I haven't heard of that one before, so I'm going to go quickly and see what I can find on Titan TV. Free local listings, program schedule. Okay, so that looks like a program guide. So anyway, Antenna Web, though, is where I go for all things antenna. So they should be able to help you figure out where in Omaha the signal is coming from, and then you want to put that antenna so that it has a clear view of that direction anyway, and you should have a much better time. All righty.
All right. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for calling. Okay, we got one more quickly.
Yeah. We've got Amin in Rancho Cucamonga.
Rancho Cucamonga, that is there. Hey,
hi.
Amin, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. We just have about a minute, so what you got?
Sure, I have some 5.1 system with the Andrew Jones Pioneer bookshelf speakers.
Ooh, nice.
I'm into a new house.
Yep.
And they're not really mountable, so I'm looking for a recommendation regarding in-ceiling speakers. I looked at the mono-price ones. I'm not sure if those are any good.
They're probably pretty good. I haven't tried them myself, but I wouldn't be at all surprised. I love the Golden Ear in-ceiling speakers. Also, Origin Acoustics makes excellent ones. Speakercraft makes excellent ones. I believe Polk also, and Definitive Technology, if I'm not mistaken. There are a number of companies that make really, really good in-ceiling speakers. And the amazing thing is that in-ceiling speakers can work tremendously well for a 5.1 surround system. So that's it. Thanks so much for the call. It's Scott Wilkinson, the Home Theater Geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hope you're enjoying today's show. I'll be back on tomorrow's podcast. I'm over at Boulder, Colorado with my son, father-son frat day. Oh, my. Meanwhile, so Scott will be back in a moment. But meanwhile, let me tell you a little bit about our sponsor, Corning Optical Cables. I know you know the name Corning. I mean, the kings of glass, Gorilla Glass and Corningware and all that. Well, they have transformed the traditional USB and Thunderbolt cables. They're, you know, when you get them now, they're most of the time they're copper. They've got a technology that turns them into incredibly durable fiber optic speed demons. This is awesome. Whether you're into high-end photography, audio production, you want the most reliable cables out there. Maybe for heat and sound, you want to move your hard drives away from the vicinity, put them in a closet or something. These Corning optical cables are fantastic. They can go so much farther than regular cables. 60 meters, that's 200 feet for Thunderbolt. 50 meters, 165 feet. 165 feet for USB 3. And the data rates are amazing. 20 gigabits per second for Thunderbolt. 5 gigabits per second for USB 3. No other cable even comes close. Now, I know a lot of you worry about fiber optic. In fact, when we first got fiber optics here in the studio, oh, the engineer said, be very careful. Don't crimp them. Don't bend them. Don't stand on them. They're very fragile. Well, Corning has invented new fiber that is incredible. They have figured out a way to make their USB and Thunderbolt cables super strong, super flexible. You can bend them. You can walk on them. You can tie them in a knot, and they keep transmitting at top speed. I like to say they take a bending and keep on sending. I mean, this is amazing. You're going to love them. 50% thinner, 80% lighter than traditional copper cables. They're great. I use them now on everything. Corning optical cables, longer, thinner, lighter, and stronger. Go to opticalcablesbycorning.com to learn more. Opticalcablesbycorning.com. We thank Corning for their support of the Tech Guy. Now back to Scott Wilkinson.
Oh, yeah, baby. We are rocking now. It's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And who should we have on the line with us here in the last segment of the show? As per usual, it's Dickie D, the Mad Magazine's maddest writer, also known as the Giz Whiz. Dickie D, thanks so much for being here. I'm so glad to see you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're here because I bought two things. I wanted to connect them together, and I'm having trouble.
Oh, maybe I can help you. So
I'm not on the cutting edge of TV like you are. My last TV was the Olivia 37-inch HD TV.
I've got to tell you, I still have an Olivia in my house.
Oh, okay. Well, mine ran for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Gave up the ghost. I started looking around, and I'm looking, and I go, wait a minute. Vizio has a 4K TV for about $150 more than the one I was looking at.
Mm-hmm.
It's their smallest. It's the M series.
Yep.
It's a 43-inch 4K.
Yep.
And it was at Best Buy, and I paid $549.
Beautiful.
I love the set, and then but not too crazy about the speakers in it.
Okay. Why am I not surprised?
Oh, okay. But I live in a little apartment. I don't want to annoy my neighbors, so I have a Bose SoundLink Mini that I like, and I hook up the SoundLink Mini directly to my Vizio with the audio out jacks in the back.
Okay.
And I sit down. Now I have great sound, great video, and I hit the remote, and the remote does not control the sound going to the Bose Mini.
In terms of the now, volume, you mean?
Yes, the volume. So the Olivia had variable audio out, but the Vizio doesn't. And now, when I went on Google, it said lots of TVs no longer do that.
Well,
but I figured you would know.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you taking the analog out, audio out from the TV or the digital audio out?
You know what? I'm using the RCA jacks.
Okay, so that's analog.
Analog, right.
Okay, so the first thing I would recommend, and actually this came also into the chat room, is have you looked in the Vizio's menu system, in particular the audio menu, where there may very well be a control that says, do you want the audio output to be fixed or variable?
Oh, all right. I will do that right after the
show.
You
might very well be able that there may be that control. I don't know for sure.
Okay.
But
okay.
If there is, that's the fix. Boom. You're done.
Yep.
You're using the Vizio remote, right?
Yes, I am. That's what I would like to do.
So that's the first solution. If that works, boom, you're done. If that doesn't work and it's only fixed level output, then I would have to say you'd probably want to go with a universal remote like the Logitech Harmony we've been talking about today or something like that, where the volume buttons on the universal remote would control the volume of the Bose speaker, not the volume of the Vizio TV.
Okay.
That would be those are the two things I would try. But certainly first, look in the menu system and see if it has a selection for fixed or variable.
Very good.
It may very well. Now, you know, there are some TVs certainly still, there are some that don't have that. They're just fixed because first of all, they're not necessarily expecting you to plug an inexpensive TV into an external sound system, right? They're just expecting you to use the speakers in the TV.
Right. So the digital out sound would be controllable by the remote control then?
Possibly. That would be something to experiment with.
Okay.
To see whether or not that, if there's such a control that says fixed or variable, does that, I assume it would apply to both the analog and the digital. And I assume that the Bose has a digital input as well.
Well, the little SoundLink Mini doesn't.
Oh, okay. So you have to use analog.
Use the RCA. Yeah.
Got it.
But again, you know, my apartment is, you know, 43-inch, it's almost a wall-to-wall TV.
I was going to say 4K at 43 inches. That's really small.
Yeah, that is the littlest they made. The littlest I know of.
Yeah, that's the littlest I think I know of as well. Yeah. You know, with 4K, you just want bigger. You want a bigger screen because you have more detail to see.
Yeah.
So,
but you know that the upscaling, I like the Vizio a lot.
I do too.
The value
too.
Is really there.
Tremendous. Tremendous. Yes. The Vizio M series, really, really good. You know, it's so funny. This company that came out of almost nowhere to be one of the top TV makers in the world.
You know, I went to that preview of their 120-inch
one. Oh, yeah. The 120-inch Vizio reference. Yes. Did that blow you away or what?
Yes, yes. It's bigger than the movie theater I go to, you know.
As I've said before, you have to almost build your house around that thing. How do you get it into your house?
Yeah. Well, they actually, I talked to the guy. I think it's $130,000
or something. That's what it is.
Guys, the first thing they do is come to your house to see if you can even accommodate
Right. Well, we won't sell this to you until we come and do a site visit.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I sure hope that works. Let me know.
Okay, yeah, I will. That's a great idea.
Okay, fantastic.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Got a couple comments in the chat room for Dickie D. Hope he's still listening. Hodor says that the Vizio remote can be programmed to control another device's audio. I didn't realize that the Vizio remote was programmable, but that would be yet another solution. Absolutely. And Lawn Dog says that the digital outs are usually fixed, and I believe that is true. Absolutely. We had a call earlier about recording from Elliot, I think, the 12-year-old scallywag who from Boston who wanted to record from his DVR. And John, our engineer here, brought me in what's called an HDCP stripper. It's an HDMI gizmo. It's a little gizmo. It has an HDMI in and an HDMI out, and it removes the copy protection. So that would be one way to do it, and a pretty cool way at that. I had not really looked at that. They use that around here in the studio, and so that's a solution that I wanted to make sure people knew about. We've got just a little bit of time left. Who should I talk to, Heather?
Let's talk to Jim in Menifee, California.
Okay, I'm going to push that button and that button. Jim in Menifee, California. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek. How are you?
Good, how are you? Thanks for squeezing me in.
You bet. Just got a little bit of time.
Okay, I have a JVC 720p 1080i DLP projection TV.
Okay, a rear projector TV, a big box.
Yeah, the bulb went out. We bought a cheap one at Amazon. It lasted 3 months.
Uh-huh.
The new bulbs are from JVC are $300.
Uh-huh.
So the $300 question is that TV good? Because the kids' room will only be for gaming and probably DVDs, or should I buy another type TV?
Well, $300. How big is it?
It's a 52-inch.
It's a 52-inch. You're not, you know, you could get a 50-inch something for $500 maybe or $600, something like that. It'd be more expensive than replacing the bulb, but you would be stepping into the 21st century. So, you know, my general recommendation under those conditions is probably bite the bullet and buy a new TV.
So the new TV is better for gaming, like Xbox.
Some TVs better than others. Has this TV worked well for gaming in the past?
We used it for our main TV, and then I bought a Panasonic Plasma 65-inch for the house. So it went into the room, and then we just haven't bought the bulb yet.
Right.
We haven't really just used it.
I would say for gaming, it might be worth doing replacing the bulb because DLP has very fast response times, and that's very important for gaming. So listen, thanks so much for the call. Thanks, everybody, for the great show today. I'm Scott Wilkinson, the home theater geek, filling in for Leo Laporte, the tech guy, who will be back tomorrow. And until then, geek out.
Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.